Welcome along to the Matchbook Betting Podcast. I'm Emmett Kennedy, joined as usual by Matchbook's big bet expert, Mr. Jesse May.
Hello, Emmett.
It is episode 2 of season 2 of the show dedicated to bringing you betting insights to help you make smarter and more informed bets. And the two people tasked with that first up as we preview the weekend's football action are Mark Stitchcombe from Matchbook's betting site. Mark, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Emmett. Hi, Jesse.
And it's a debut for the Betting Emporium's Ian Broderick.
Hi.
Welcome along to the show, Ian. You, Jesse May, do you want to make this announcement?
No. Go ahead. I'm actually very excited that Ian has come along just at the right time to get us out of the hole.
Okay. Get us out of the hole that you yourself managed to fix for us last year because you were our mystery donor.
So, yes. It was the least I could do after Neil had managed to get you into that hole.
It's all Channing's fault. Neil and Stephen Harris will join us to preview the weekend's racing a little bit later on as well. And then, of course, we've got a fantastic race meeting at York next week, which we'll talk about as well on the Matchbook Betting Podcast. But it's week 2 of the Premier League. We're not just going to talk about that. We're also, would you believe it, going to talk about French football as well. But first of all, let's go for the Premier League. 1:30 kickoff on Super Sunday. Huddersfield taking on Newcastle United. The latest betting on Matchbook from Jesse is
Huddersfield, that's going to be a fun thing to be saying this year, is a favorite. Good for them. Just about 6-4 in the 1-2 home against Newcastle. And Huddersfield, a quarter of a goal favorite in the handicap, with the over-under on 2.25. I guess, Mark, yeah, I mean, these are both promoted teams, right?
Jesse May not in the least bit patronizing there in his intro to poor old Huddersfield Town.
My history is very bad, but this is their first time ever in the Premier League, isn't it?
It surely is. And to be fair, they were impressive at the weekend. Very, very impressive, to be fair. Whereas Newcastle United put up a good fight, but in the end succumbed to Tottenham Hotspur. So, Mark, what do you make of this one?
Well, when I was having a look through the matches last night on the Matchbook website, this jumped out at me with the goal line at 2.25. Generally, in the Premier League, you're looking at a goal line of 2.5 because over the last 3 seasons, the average goals in the Premier League is 2.69. So generally, you're normally looking at over underline of 2.5. When you've got one of the sort of big 6 playing, that will rise to 2.75, 3 sometimes as well. So, for example, Liverpool at home to Palace, the goal line there is 3. Man City at home to Everton Monday night, the goal line there is 3. And then on the flip side, Burnley are playing West Brom. I don't think it's any surprise that the goal line there is 2.25. But I think this one's quite interesting because, as you say, they're both two newly promoted sides. We're only in the second game of the season. I don't see either playing with the handbrake on. And they obviously both played each other last season. And Newcastle won this match 3-1 in March. And then in the reverse fixture at St James's Park a year ago in August, Huddersfield won 2-1. So they're obviously both adept at scoring against each other. And I think we're sort of stealing about a quarter of a goal here. I definitely think the line should be about 2.5.
Mark, well, what's the possible reason for this goal line being so low?
I wouldn't say it's so low. I just think it's very slightly out. The reason for it, Huddersfield last season finished with a negative goal difference, which everyone seems to be thinking that means that they won't be able to survive in the Premier League. I think it's definitely too early to say. But yeah, I think maybe their playing style negates to perhaps not a very high output on the sort of expected goals narrative. I think last week, even though they put 3 away against Palace, I don't think their expected goals was very high in that game. But there were still a couple of chances that they could have scored. There was a 1-on-1. That if the striker had been a bit more attentive, he would have got his shot away in time. But yeah, I think essentially it's probably based on the playing style. But I do think there's a little bit of value here by taking the over 2.25. And if there's only 2 goals, we only lose half our stake. So I've got the odds here. I make the odds about 1.83, and I think we can get about 2.04. So I'm going to leave it up to you, Jesse, to tell us what our staking size should be based on the edge.
Okay, I'll get to that a little later. I've been fooling around with this Kelly calculator, and I think just in general, the kind of thing I'm working with right now is that early in the season, based on what we were talking about last week, we'll just look at, you know, like assuming we have about a half or 1% edge after commission. And then a little bit as it moves towards the season, we'll start to think maybe we could be as high as, you know, between, you know, 2 to 4%, perhaps.
I'm liking the sound of that. Ian, you've heard the thoughts of Mark. Huddersfield got off to a fantastic start for the Premier League debut with a 3-0 win over Crystal Palace, who are sort of in a transition state at the moment with the new manager, and Newcastle coming off that 2-0 defeat to Tottenham Hotspur. What do you make of the game?
Firstly, confession, the writing I do for Betting and Porum is all European, so I don't do the Premier League, but obviously spent a lot of time watching it and thinking about it. I wrote some notes before Mark started speaking, and my notes said over 2.5 and both teams to score. exactly the same reasoning that he came up with there. I mean, clearly last season they played each other twice. We've got a recent form line there where both games have had goals in them. I think also importantly, Huddersfield have signed Mounier from Montpellier, and he was the striker who missed the one-on-one, but he scored two decent goals. He's an interesting player. I think he had a good season for Montpellier last season, and he's got the sort of attributes where he could do well in the Premier League. He's quite strong and physical, and I think I also like Aaron Moy quite a lot, who they signed. They had him on loan last year from Man City, and they've signed him permanently now from them. So he's a good signing for Huddersfield and should improve them going forwards. Newcastle also lost two first-choice defenders in their first game. So they're going to be without Lejeune and Dummett for this match. Mm. So there's every chance we're going to see quite an open game. And I thought, to be honest with you, I mean, I like 2.5. I like taking, you know, the sort of 5 to 4 upwards on 2.5 even. You know, but you know, I realise you're trying to be quite sort of risk-averse this year on what you're looking to do. But I think I'd just echo everything Mark said, really. I think this is a game where Huddersfield are obviously going to be playing with confidence after their 3-0 win against Palace, and Newcastle are going to look to bounce back after, you know, the idiocy of John Joe Shelby. Oh. And, you know, they were doing okay at the time at 0-0.
What was he thinking?
Oh, I mean, what a fool.
But, absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, so yes, I think a very long-winded say of I agree with Mark. So,
Ian, it was a long-winded way, and I'm sure you'll be more succinct as we go along. But yeah, as you were alluding to there, Jesse does want to be more risk-averse this season. But the thing is, I could see him, as you were endorsing Mark's selection, just reaching over to Matchbook and going, more on, put more on. No, don't be a moron, be more risk-averse.
You're right. It does make me feel more confident. I think it's a really, really good analysis. But I also... You know, I really want to take to heart kind of what Mark and other people have told me about, you know, don't read too much into the early stuff in the Premier League during the season. You know, you'll get much better information when you have more stats to work with as the season goes on. So yeah. It's the second week.
And that was something...
I'd agree with that. But I think also having played last year twice and come up together, they probably know each other quite well. So anyway, look, I'm probably a bit more aggressive than some others. So.
We like aggressive, though. We do like aggressive. And as the weeks go on, who knows? Maybe we'll become more aggressive. Maybe Jesse will revert back to old ways. We shall see as the Matchbook Betting Podcast continues for the Premier League season. The 4 p.m. kickoff live on Sky Sports as part of Super Sunday is the London Derby. Tottenham Hotspur against Chelsea. First and second in the Premier League last season, but two very different starts to the season. Let's get the betting on Matchbook from Jesse.
I'm actually excited about this game. Everybody's been talking about how bad Chelsea is, so that gets me excited. Tottenham Hotspur are 2.12 in the 1x2. Do you even call them at home? Isn't it a new stadium? And they are minus half a goal, and the over-under is 2.5.
So Tottenham Hotspur got off to a great start, beating Newcastle by 2-0, but as Jesse has said, they're now playing at Wembley, and they've had their difficulties there in the past. Chelsea, on the other hand, oh dear, they've lost the Charity Shield, They had two men sent off against Burnley, one of them ridiculously so in Cesc Fabregas, and they lost 3-2 to Burnley. And the other problem is that we're seeing Conte turn up in his tracksuit every time to press conferences and to games, which is exactly what Mourinho started doing as he started to lose his mind in his final season there as well. Is the writing on the wall for Conte and Chelsea this season, Mark?
So I'm labelling Chelsea now as in a crisis. I'm happy to now decide that they're currently on a bit of a negative decline, just with everything we've previously discussed last week about going on with Conte and the...
I mean, Mark, you had it, just to say quickly, spot on. You were talking about, I think, the 5.1 in the outright had gone to like 5.5. It's now only 6 days later. Chelsea are 10-1 to win the Premier League.
Yeah, that's quite an incredible overreaction, but perhaps understandable given, as we've said, the lack of investment. I think come the end of the transfer window and seeing what business they've done as well as everyone else, that price could look really good. And I think next season they're on about now talking about shutting the window for the Premier League before the season starts, which from a betting point of view is going to be it's going to be really good, really, because you can assess everything without constantly going, well, what if they sell him or what if they sign that player, etc. But with regards to this game, so there's no Cahill and Fabregas, as Emmett alluded to, after they both got sent off against Burnley. Pedro's still suspended after his red card against Arsenal in the Community Shield. Hazard's still injured. New signing Bakayoko, who's replacing the current Ballon d'Or favourite Nemanja Matic, is injured. Diego Costa's just chilling on the beach in Brazil. So you throw all that together and they're missing 66% of their goals from last season, which is a massive amount. Obviously, Morata and Batshuayi, I assume, will replace Costa, which is, you know, not too bad. William will probably come in for Pedro, which again is a decent replacement. But they have no replacement then for Hazard. No one really to come in for Fabregas. No one really for Cahill. You know, and that's a big part of their spine: Hazard, Fabregas, and Cahill. And particularly on the latter two, Chelsea scored the most goals last season from set pieces. They scored 24% of their goals from set pieces, which is a huge amount. And obviously, Cahill got 6 goals and Fabregas got 12 assists. So I think that's quite telling. And we obviously, Tottenham have got the best defence in the league. So full strength in this match, I'd have Spurs about 2.09. So I've tried to factor in those Chelsea absentees and I've come up with Spurs about 1.87. So I think we can back them minus a quarter around about 1.83. And I think that's quite a good bet. I've got that about 1.64. Obviously, we've got the Wembley factor to consider, but I just think that the market hasn't quite realised how many absentees Chelsea have got, and I think their price could move.
Sorry, Mark, just quickly, it's interesting because you did say there was an overreaction, a bit of an overreaction with Chelsea, but actually what you're saying is perhaps the reaction wasn't even big enough.
No, I think the overreaction, because obviously the Premier League is 9 months, so the current state of the Chelsea team, that could easily swing back round, you know, in a month's time. But in the short term, for this weekend, I don't think the odds have been factored enough for all the Chelsea absentees.
I know that Tottenham did try to get the Wembley pitch resized to their specifications and the FA told them no. Maybe when they were trying to hire Wembley, they should have actually put that into the negotiation at the start. And that might have been a bit of an idea. Daniel Levy tends to be quite a shrewd operator, but dropped the ball there. So they've got to play to the Wembley specifications, which doesn't always suit them. But that being said, Chelsea seem to have every player in the world on loan. Couldn't some of these guys actually be quite useful to them, Ian, now that they're in this situation, these constant FA Cup winning youth sides are all being loaned off, and now they're in big trouble.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Chelsea fan, so I mean, I'm sort of emotionally involved with this game to put my cards on the table. I mean, I think what Chelsea do very, very well with the loan system is use it to sort of get around the rules on financial fair play.
Mm.
I don't actually agree with the way they're allowed to do it, because they just buy up all these young talent and send them abroad and then sell them on. Like Nathan Ake, for example, you get 20 million for him and, you know, it balances the books very nicely and they never get a sniff at the first team. Just with regard to the pitch size, I think that's relevant. I think Spurs obviously struggled with the size of the Wembley pitch when they played in Europe last season. I think they play quite a sort of high pressing game when they don't have the ball. Which is, you know, works brilliantly at White Hart Lane, which is, you know, a very small and compact pitch. But at Wembley, it's not as effective. And, I, you know, again, as I said, I'm happy to sort of go with Mark's analysis of this because he's a neutral and has, you know, probably got a slightly more objective eye on it. But, I mean, just as a fan, I mean, I could say, you know, looking at Chelsea's squad, they've still got, you know, it's long, young Danish defender Christensen to come in, who's been brilliant on loan at Borussia Mönchengladbach for 2 years. I mean, you talk about the loan system, and he's probably the first player who's actually come back who looks like he's got a chance of playing consistently. I think defensively, he could slot in to the Cahill role and or as Piliquetta with Moses coming back. I did read there was some talk about Luiz maybe being pushed forward into a holding midfield role.
Oh, that has not worked well in the past.
No, well, no, it hasn't. I mean, look, there's no doubt Chelsea are below strength. I wouldn't get involved with this game financially, personally, because I think there are enough question marks about how Spurs would play at Wembley to want to have some certainty around that before I sort of invested money with them, even if it wasn't Chelsea. I think
it's not just the fact that you are emotionally attached to Chelsea as a fan. It's the fact that you don't have enough information about how Tottenham are going to adapt to playing their home games at Wembley.
No, exactly. I mean, last season, I mean, Pochettino, I hugely admire Pochettino. And, you know, when they were playing at Wembley in Europe last year, they set out pitches at their training ground for the dimensions of Wembley to train on. And it still didn't help them.
Mm.
So it does worry me, not worry me, but I mean, in their style of play, I think that they're not going to be as effective at Wembley. And of course, it's not home. And, I, you know, again, you don't really know what the atmosphere is going to be like or anything like that. So I would certainly want to see them play sort of a few home games before wanting to get with them, especially in a game like this where Chelsea, you know, historically have done very well against them. Chelsea have got a good record against them at Wembley. You know, and as I say, I might be talking as a fan there, but I think I would have reservations about that.
Okay, so Ian, you're stressing to proceed with caution. Just to go back to what you were saying last week, Mark, you want to let the betting models build as the season goes along, and maybe about 5 weeks into the Premier League season, that's when you'll really get stuck in. But in terms of having gone through the lack of strength and depth in this Chelsea side and having two players suspended, you do seem quite confident on Tottenham.
Yeah, I just think I agree with what Ian's saying there about Spurs and Wembley, and I've factored that in. But I just think that the price is too big, even taking that into consideration. And we're still keeping the draw on side by backing them minus a quarter. So if it finished a draw, we'd still get half our stake back. So I still think it's a fairly sensible selection. Just on a sort of a side topic, which I thought was quite interesting, I listened to Rory Smith on BBC Five Live on Monday night, who's a journalist for the New York Times, I think.
He's brilliant.
And he suggested that perhaps Conte almost threw the game against Burnley in order to make his point even louder. And he was nearly suggesting that the integrity of the league was brought into question. And whilst I think that's quite a bold statement, I thought it was interesting that he made that observation a public one.
Wow. That's a very strong view to take, which the Matchbook Betting Podcast would like to distance themselves from. The views of Rory Smith are not necessarily those.
I mean, controversy. Controversy. It can only put the betting markets into chaos and give us some value. And just say quickly, I think you guys have both made some nice cases. I actually like Mark's angle here, and like this bet better than the first one. But that's just that's me.
And next week on the show, Rory Smith will join us to cause more chaos on the podcast. Right, the Sunday football doesn't stop there. We're off to France to Ligue 1 as Paris Saint-Germain runners up. Bizarrely enough, as they got taken apart by that brilliant young Monaco team, which have now itself been taken apart, will face Toulouse at the weekend at 8 o'clock. The betting on this game on Matchbook from Jesse is...
This is going to be fun this season. I'm looking forward to watching some European. PSG. Oh, are they really? Wow, that's they're like 1 to 10 on here in the 1 by 2. Toulouse. Is nearly guaranteed. The handicap, though, -2.75 for PSG and Toulouse +2.75. That's 2.75. That's about even money each way with the over under 3.5. Ian, how do you like it? And by the way, Ian, I've been looking at your stats. You have some of the most successful stats of all the betting emporium experts. And I think it's over like 40,000 units. You're showing a 4% ROI on all your European football.
That's also a nice subtle dig there at Neil Channing, by the way.
even better, an unintentional dig at Neil Channing. I love it.
I mean, a lot of the stuff I do is in the smaller leagues as well. So I tend to specialize in, you know, places like the Portuguese second division and the Swiss second division and leagues where you know we know more than the bookies, which is nice.
Leagues so, that Rory Smith likes, by the sounds of things.
You do have to be a little bit careful in some of them, especially like Croatia. We'll talk about it another time. It's a fabulous game in Croatia, which is always fixed every year. Which is always good fun.
Okay, we definitely want to preview that on the show. Let's get to this game. Toulouse won their opening game of the season by beating Montpellier by a goal to nil. But the big team we want to talk about is obviously Paris Saint-Germain, who've broken the transfer record for signing with Neymar, £198 million. Goals to price ratio, one goal gets you... £198 million gets you one goal. Scored in his debut, but he did have an assist as well, and Cavani was on the score sheet too. So... the thing is, our colleague Mark was making the point on Twitter that there's now a fire sale at PSG this week and they've sold off some pretty key players. Is that something that's going to continue, Ian? And if it is it something that we should be concerned about before they take on Toulouse, given the fact that they're 10-1 on a Matchbook?
If I'm honest, it's very difficult to tell. I mean, there's obviously question marks about financial fair play. There's big rumours going around that they're going to sign Mbappe for, you know, an enormous amount of money as well. Oof. Whether or not they're just going to stick to UEFA and say, you know, sue us, I don't know. I don't think they'd sell enough players to balance the books. So it'll be interesting to see. I think it's more a case that they've got players that they just don't need. They've bought, you know, some amazing players in the last few years. I think the Neymar thing is very interesting, though. I mean, the way that the bookies have reacted to his signing and... They played well last week. I mean, they beat Guingamp 3-0 away from home. But I don't know, anyone who watched that game, PSG struggled for the first 50-odd minutes. I mean, basically, they tended to overplay. They're a bit like Arsenal from a few years ago, that they were trying to score the perfect goal. And in the end, PSG opened the scoring with this bizarre own goal from the Guingamp fullback, who basically passed it into his own net under no pressure. And... it was only then that they started to relax a bit. They also struggled in their first game against newly promoted Amiens. They won that game 2-0, obviously without Neymar. But the thing with PSG to bear in mind is that Emery, their manager, was brought in from Sevilla to replace Laurent Blanc just over a year ago, a season ago. And he was brought in specifically to try and bring them success in European football. He hasn't actually got a great knowledge of French domestic football. And PSG tend to win games domestically just because they've got way better players than everyone else. you know, tactically, they're not actually, you know, you wouldn't say they were that strong domestically against certain sides. And Toulouse are a really interesting team for me. I mean, they've got a real sort of attitude, as a number of clubs have with PSG. You know, PSG are very disliked in France generally. And Toulouse last season beat them 2-0 at home and drew 0-0 away. So they kept two clean sheets against them last season. Now, PSG have got obviously a good record against them over a period of time, but Toulouse will go in hard on them. There's a great quote. It's actually on the Toulouse website. They've got a new midfielder, a guy called Karizak from Bastia, and he's a bit of a loony. And he's basically quoted on the website saying, "Neymar, I'll meet you on August the 19th. Don't forget your shin pads." and that's on the official Toulouse website.
Brilliant.
So, you know, I think the Toulouse attitude to the game is going to be fairly straightforward. I mean, they're going to get into PSG's faces. They're going to sit deep and they're just going to try and kick lumps out of Neymar. There's obviously a bit of a danger. The referee who's been appointed for the game hasn't given a red card out in his last 30 matches. So he's quite lenient. So I've approached this on the basis I quite like Toulouse with the handicap. I mean, I think there's been a definite overreaction from the bookies as to how good PSG are. If you look at the last, since 2011, when the Qataris bought PSG, Toulouse and PSG have played 16 times. And Toulouse have only lost by more than two goals twice in that time. Now, to me, they're a side who are going to really up their game. They only lost narrowly to Monaco the first game of the season, 3-2. And they led that game 1-0 and then 2-1. So they're a side who can also score goals. And I'm certainly not convinced about PSG defensively. You know, I think down the flank, Bez will push forwards a lot. Neymar has a free role. So I think that they're definitely going to be susceptible to counterattacks with pace, which is... it's something Toulouse have got. You know, they sold their main striker Braithwaite in the summer to Middlesbrough, but they've brought in Yaya Sanogo from Arsenal. They've also signed Max Gradle on loan from Bournemouth this week, and Gradle's got a very good record in Ligue 1, both goal scoring and creating. So they've also kept much of the same squad from last season with a couple of additions in midfield. So I'm naturally a bit of a contrarian, and I just think PSG are way too short here. I mean, obviously, they are good enough that they could win games 5-6-0, but I think they're going to struggle to do that against some of the more robust Ligue 1 sides they come across. And they're not going to think twice about getting stuck into Neymar. So, I like the sort of, you know, 2.75. You're getting around even money at that level, and obviously you get half your stake back if you lose by three goals. And I think it's easy to get carried away with PSG and how they could play rather than actually how they do play.
I'm pretty sold on that analysis. I'm pretty sold. Can Mark talk us off it, you think?
No, I agree with everything Ian said there, really. There's some really good insight there. When he mentioned the game to me originally, I was thinking PSG must be about 2.25 faves. So to see them 2.75 faves, I definitely think that the value is with Toulouse there.
So we're going to go with Toulouse at the weekend, hopefully to win for us, in terms of the betting perspective anyway, in French Ligue 1. It's an awful shame that BT Sport decided to get rid of the European Football Show, which was a brilliant roundup of the games. But anyway, alas, they did that. But you can still watch the game on BT Sport this weekend. Ian, tell us a little bit about the subscription service that you do for the Betting Emporium, because if I don't ask you about this, first of all, Neil Channing will be very mad. But secondly, the fact that you're... profit and loss ratio has been mentioned there by Jesse. This is something that I think we should know a little bit more about.
Okay, well, I mean, it's been running for around 3 years now. So I think since we started, I mean, I suggest games for various amounts of points on per bet. So since we started, we've laid out about 52,000 points and we're about 2,300 points up. So that's around about 4.5% on the ROI. What I tend to find is that I have a better return on certain leagues, obviously. So the smaller leagues, places like the second division in Portugal, for example, I'm running at 11%, and you know, higher in certain other leagues. So what we tend to do is try and find value that the bookies have a bit of a cheap mentality. I mean, they don't really know the conditions in these small. If you could get the information, and, you know, like anything with betting, information is key. And if you've got the information and have the time to analyze it, then hopefully there's a bit of an edge to be had. So we offer this subscription service. People pay £50 a month and hopefully get some value from it. Certainly we seem to have plenty of people who are happy to do that. And yeah, we're anyone sort of betting £10 a point on the stuff is 23 grand up over the last 3 years. So, you know, they're in clover.
Knowledge is power, information is power, and Ian Broderick seems to have both. So, absolutely being interested in that. And, of course, we'll be fascinated to hear more of your insight in European football throughout the new season, season two of the Matchbook Betting Podcast. Mark, you've also got the newsletter for Matchbook, which is currently available at insights.matchbook.com, which continues to go very well.
Yes, we've last week we moved over to a blog now. So if you navigate to the website you just mentioned, you will find a weekly blog detailing my betting week. So the
I read it, by the way, Mark. Great stuff. Really good stuff last week. Yeah.
Cheers. So detailing the highs and the inevitable lows of my week in the betting world.
And the fact that you are putting on paper, or should I say now typing on a screen, the emotional highs and lows of your betting week. Like, I know that you would keep a record of everything anyway, but as you now put that into words, how does that feel?
Yeah, I guess it's quite good to have a release, and maybe a lot of people that can resonate with the same turmoil that you go through on a weekly basis. This weekend's one should be quite good. Now we've had a week's worth of the Premier League, so I'll be analysing that and just seeing if there's anything that spotted early on that perhaps hasn't been factored in and could be worth keeping an eye on in the coming weeks.
Okay, some very valuable insight from Ian Broderick and from Mark Stitchcombe. Hopefully a profitable weekend ahead for us on Sunday with Huddersfield versus Newcastle, Tottenham against Chelsea, and Paris Saint-Germain against Toulouse. From Mark Stitchcombe and Ian Broderick, great debut. We'll chat to you again soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Cheers, guys. Cheers, Ian.
Horse racing now on the Matchbook Betting Podcast. Before we talk about that, Jesse and I were off air discussing the McGregor-Mayweather fight, which some people seem to think it's a circus. I can't wait for it. I cannot wait for this fight. And the fact that McGregor's been allowed to use the smaller gloves, it's on. And there's going to be an offer on Matchbook, Jesse.
There is. First of all, it is a circus, and that's why I can't wait for it. Who you know, this is going to be... The betting has been flying off the roof. In the last 36 hours, I think Matchbook has tripled their volume so far. It's there's been a 300,000 euro bet match on the screen on Mayweather. There's been a 200,000 euro bet matched on Mayweather. His price is coming out, but from tomorrow, Matchbook is doing a special from tomorrow through till the fight time. Place your bet on the Matchbook Exchange on this fight, either fighter, your winnings will be topped up by 1% for every round the fight goes, up to 12% and up to 100 pounds. So, for instance, if you bet on Mayweather and the fight goes four rounds and he wins, then you'll get a 4% bonus on your winnings.
Nice.
And if it goes 12, you have to get a 12%. So it's kind of you have to figure out what you think the optimal stake is.
I'm very much looking forward to talking about that fight as well on the Matchbook Betting Podcast. Also, in terms of horse racing, new offer?
We've actually got a new offer in terms of the English Premier League, which I guess I'm a little late in mentioning. But it is now, for the rest of August, 0% comms on all EPL bets on Thursdays. So if you still have a chance today and tonight to make your Sunday bets and get 0% commission.
All right, like that. And, of course, we've got some strong selections from Mark and from Ian for the Premier League. Ligue 1 doesn't quite count in that offer, but still, there's a very confident selection from the earlier section of the podcast from Ian Broderick. Let's bring in our horse racing experts for today's show. First up, from betting expert, Mr. Stephen Harris. Welcome back, sir.
Yeah, hi, guys.
And the godfather of the betting emporium himself, Mr. Neil Channing.
Hello.
Hey, have either of you guys got a position on the McGregor fight? I don't mean opinion.
I don't really watch this UFC stuff or whatever it's called. Is that what it's called?
Yeah,
I'm a bit squeamish about the whole thing. I don't really like the idea of, the only time I like people, brutally smashing the what's name out of each other is when they're doing a Nazi rally, basically.
Just to be clear, just so we're clear, Neil, you want the Nazis being beaten up?
Oh yeah. I'm with the good guys.
Just to clarify,
people tell me that it's like an absolute certainty he should be 100-1 on. And all that happens every day is that McGregor gets a bit shorter.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like I'm going to have a bet at 4-1 on the day on something that I never watch, that I won't look at, that I don't know anything about.
He's actually
a good thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Neil. He's actually a better price. I think he's about to 7 now. He's actually got bigger and bigger. The only thing that's starting to cross your mind is it sort of is it going to be one of these like Big Daddy against Giant Haystacks matches where
they've... Oh, I wish it was. I would watch it then.
Yeah.
I don't know what you mean, but it sounds like fun.
He never knocks anyone out, though, does he?
If I Google Big Daddy against Giant Haystacks, I bet it to be
one in the distance.
He's the most boring fighter on the planet, but he's made a career out of it and millions of dollars
as well. Don't we just bet him to win on points? Isn't that what we do?
Probably, but to be fun, I'm going to back McGregor. I'm just going to put this straight out there. I'm backing McGregor. Right, let's get straight to the racing action. It's on Racing UK and ITV4 this weekend. We're going to first of all talk about the 225 at Newbury, the Geoffrey Freer Stakes. And Frontiersman, one of the most quirky horses in training, will probably be heading the betting for this one. Staying on the Premier League line, Defoe, unbeaten this season, lines up for Roger Varian and Andre Adsini. How do you see this race going, Stephen?
It's got good shape for punters. There's 9 runners. The thing is, it's one of these races you're looking to play each way, but the middle pins are all opposable. To Eternity came back from over a year off last time to win, I thought, quite unimpressively, and it's only sort of 2 weeks on from that. Mm. That'll be a big bounce candidate for me, Gosden's filly. The other one, Agent Murphy, he hasn't been seen out for a very long time. There has to be a good chance he'll need the run. I do think it's a match, and it's one of those races. When you look at it without looking at prices, which I always try and do, because I find otherwise you look at prices first and it gives you your opinion already. But when I looked at it without prices, I thought that Defoe would be sort of 6-4 and Frontiersman would be 2-1 and it would be sort of 8, 9, 10-1 bar the pair. But actually Defoe is 2-1, just over 2-1 on Matchbook at the moment, I think. And Frontiersman's about 11-4 chance. And that's around about 11-8 on the pair coupled. And I think that's a very fair price. But from a punting point of view, I think Defoe's rock solid. He's not stopped improving for Varian. And unusually for this stable, he's actually very positive and upbeat. And he sees the horse as his St. Ledger horse this year. Every time he's gone over a longer trip, he's improved. He won at Hamilton last time, despite trading quite big in running. He was under pressure quite a long way out. But he was very strong at the finish that day. And the horse he beat, Frankus, has come out and won a really good race in good style at Haydock over the weekend, just gone. I think the form's solid. He's up 2 furlongs in trip, which will suit definitely. He'd handle the ground if it eases, which is possible. There is some weather around over the next day or two. And I think 2-1 is a very fair price.
We may get 9-4 on him, I'm guessing, Stephen. Or do you think this has a better chance to shorten than lengthen?
Definitely. I think he's a horse, we've talked about this before, Jesse. If you back him now on Matchbook at 9-4 or even 5-2, I think come post time, he's going to be a public horse. They aren't going to back a horse who hasn't run for 600 days or one that's turned out quickly who could bounce. And bar the front four, it's about 16-1 bar four. And they have got a stone and upwards to find on ratings, most of them. I think Defoe is the standout contender. I mean, Emmett's touched on Frontiersman. I thought that he was very flattered when he finished second to Highland Reel in the Coronation Cup.
Very much agree with you there.
Highland Reel did everything wrong that day, got taken on, and I thought the placed horses were flattered. And he's since been beaten at a short price at Newmarket. I mean, he's the danger to Defoe on ratings, and he's sure to run really well. He's got conditions to suit. He's a proven stayer, but he has had 9 career runs now. He's more exposed than Defoe, and you sense that one of them's going forwards and the other one's a bit quirky. So as they're both about the same price, I'd side with Defoe.
All right, strong vote of confidence for the Bournemouth striker Defoe from Stephen Harris. Neil Channing, your views on the Jeffrey Freer Stakes.
I found it a bit annoying this race, actually. I was licking my lips. Exactly, you know, like you said, there's nine runners. It's kind of close to kind of 2-1 each of two. So I was thinking, you know, probably if I... and there's a couple that on ratings have got a lot to find. So I was kind of thinking, you know, there's bound to be something sort of third in, fourth in here that I can back each way and have a really good each way. But I couldn't have Agent Murphy. I mean, it's been, like you say, it's been off a long time. I sort of toyed around with Two Eternity. And the more I looked, the more I sort of thought, well, probably one of the front two is going to win it, and that's a bit boring. So, I mean, you know, I'm a fan of the Varian stable, and I don't disagree with anything Stephen said on Defoe. It is an improver, and, you know, it definitely, we don't know for sure whether it's good enough really to win in this kind of class, but it does keep going up every time, so... I guess I can see the case for it. I think of the front two, I feel like it's definitely going to be favourite of the two. I mean, they're both kind of roughly the same price at the moment. But I think if you told me one of them goes off 7-2 and one of them goes off 13-8, I would definitely say Defoe would be the one that would be shorter. But you know, maybe if that did happen on the day, then I might end up backing Frontiersman each way. At the moment, though, I'm afraid I'm going to go a bit Kevin Pollin on you and say I'm not going to have a bet in this.
Recommendation, no bet from Neil Channing. Right, that is the 225. The 335 is the Hungerford Stakes. It's a Group 2 over 7 furlongs, again live on ITV and Racing UK. And the betting on Matchbook for this race, Jesse.
The Hungerford Stakes. A lot of runners headed by Labrisa Breeze, which sounds like a drink with rum, I think. So around 11 to 4, is that correct?
Yeah. You quickly jump in with that Labrisa Breeze, Jesse, because you should remember that one. We talked about that on the pod not very long ago. Mm. Do you remember we were talking about the horse owned by Tony Bloom, where it was backed from 25 to 1 and people were still having...
Absolutely. What
somebody
one
had
of my 10 favorite
grand. I mean, some
stories.
Anonymous punter, we don't know who it could have been, had 10 grand each way, 8 to 1 twice.
After it had come in from 25s all
and
the
it
way
was,
down.
Yeah, and it had already been 25 and it was desperately unlucky that day. That was at Royal Ascot.
Beaten by
year.
Portage.
That is one of my favorite betting stories that I've heard recently.
Insane.
Well, he still owns it, and it was pretty unlucky last time.
This is the horse.
Mm, this is him, yeah.
Right.
Jesse's in shock. Jesse's in shock. This horse ran at Goodwood last time, Glorious Goodwood, finishing ninth behind the shock 50-1 winner, Breton Rock, who is a friend of the podcast, actually, and it was very suited by conditions, but it should be a little bit different in terms of conditions this week. We're looking at good going as things stand, and Labrisa Breeze is a short price favourite, around about 9-4, I think you were saying, Jesse, 11-4 on Matchbook currently. So Neil, when you look at a horse like this, who the perception is that there's a big race in him, and you talked about how unlucky he was at Royal Ascot with that huge run last year, at what point does a horse like this become a cliff horse, or now is the day we can take advantage of him?
Well, he's funny, isn't he? Because first of all, the first thing to say is you're exactly right. I think the going at the moment at Newbury is good. We're recording this on Thursday. They're talking about having possible rain on Friday, but not much. And Saturday is a nice sunny day. So I'm kind of feeling like if the going was going to go either way, I think it's more likely to, you know, nudge towards good to firm than soft. So first of all, with Breton Rock, I mean, that's got a penalty for winning as a surprise win last time out. So you know, that makes that a very hard task. And Labrisa Breeze, obviously, you know, was very unlucky last time. It is a 7-furlong race. It's a specialist 7-furlong horse. And it does have an impressive turn of foot, but it does need to come off of a strong pace. And it's not guaranteed to get a strong pace in this race. It's definitely the sort of horse that can be unlucky in running because it does need to be held up. And it does need to come through off a strong pace. and that, you know, that can be quite hard. So I would sort of say, you know, would I rather back Labrisa Breeze, a horse that I know has a lot of talent, at a big price in a Group 1 race, or would I want to back it in a smaller field, lower race like this Group 2 race, you know, where it's not guaranteed to get the pace? For me, I think this horse is not one I would want to be plunging on at this kind of price. But then I currently have Breton Rock either, because, you know, that really benefited from the extremely soft going.
Yeah.
And has to carry the penalty. So, you know, interesting. Although the other race we talked about there, Jeffrey Freer had 9 runners and 2-2-1 chances. So from an each way perspective, it had the better, what we would say, the better shape of the race. I actually quite like the shape of this race. I wasn't going to be with Massa. Owen Burrows is having a brilliant season. But that one's been off for 373 days. I have my cliff horse in the race a little bit has been Mix and Mingle, which I've got completely wrong. I bet it every time as a 3-year-old. And then when it won the 2 races as a 4-year-old, I failed to back it.
Aww.
And then I managed to back it when it lost its only race as a 4-year-old.
I've done particularly
well with that horse, a horse that's last 5 runs, say 4-0, 1-1-0. And I bet it 3 of the 4. That horse wants fast ground. If it did come up fast on the day, I could see that running a lot better here. But the one I think might be interesting is, I can't remember whether we said we were going to call it Kaspersky or Kaspersky. But either way,
Kaspersky.
Trained by Jamie. What did you say?
Kaspersky.
Oh, okay, that'll do. It's trained by Jane Chappell Higham. So, you know, that's a good thing for me because I don't think she's a bad trainer, but she certainly is not a fashionable trainer. And therefore, I think her horses tend to go off slightly bigger than they ought to. And this horse has mostly been contesting races over a mile, and it's down in trip here, which I don't mind that, actually. Although 7 furlongs is a specialist distance, I think this horse will try and make the running, and I did say that this is a race where there may not be much pace. I think he might get an uncontested lead, you know, which could set up the race for Labrisa Breeze. But the thing is that Kaspersky is, you know, nearer to 7-1, and I think is a lot bigger value. It tried to lead all last time and looked like it might have done it, and then got collared on the line by an odds-on chance. A horse of Willie Haggis's that's a pretty decent horse. And I think that form might be slightly underrated. So I actually quite like this. I sort of not massively keen on playing each way in the race just because 11 runners, if it's a fifth, is pretty terrible for each way betting unless you have a very short price favourite. And Labrisa Breeze is not that short. But having said that, I think this is pretty much certain to be there or thereabouts. Probably still be leading at the sort of half furlong. And, it, you know, I'm not massively keen always on backing front runners each way because sometimes if they do just get headed, they get swallowed up by the whole field. But I guess I'm going to have to play win only. But that'll be me, Kaspersky, win only about 7-1.
That's vidunya, comrade. Right, let's get the views of Stephen Harris on the Hungerford Stakes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting race and another. I think it's got a good shape for punters, this. I think the weak link in the chain, as Neil has touched on, is our old favourite, the top weight, Breton Rock, who's got to give weight away all round now with the penalty. He's 7 now. He won a race at Goodwood. He was 100-1, basically. They all got in each other's way up the inside and he swept, and they probably went for home too soon as well, and he swept round the outside and won a very messy race. Mm. I think he's probably about 106 chance, to be honest. I don't fancy him at all, and I suspect he'll double in price come close to the off. So he's the hole in the chain, which means, you know, there's 14% of the market. You think you've got some sort of edge. The favourite Neil's touched upon, Labrisa Breeze, is going to be a horse every Saturday punter's going to want to back. We all saw him at Goodwood. He was in trap 14 of 14. He got no run at all, and you can strike the run completely from the records. He's won on soft ground, so he won't mind if the rain arrives. But as Neil said, he's a 7 furlong specialist. Dean Ivory's horses are running really well. Bloom likes a bet. He's going to be a popular Saturday favourite. There's nothing wrong with his chances. It's just he's going to be 5-2, and it's not that sort of race. I think, you know, 7 furlongs, It's quite fine margins. He's going to come from off the pace. He needs everything to fall right. He might well come through and win, but at the price, I think you can let him win. I agree with Neil for all the reasons he said about Kapersky. He's rock solid. 6-1 is a very fair price. But I think there's two interesting runners, sort of middle pin prices. Massat, which Owen Burrows is having a terrific time of things. He's been off a year, but I suspect he's probably been primed for this. The trainer's well capable. He ran a blinder fresh first time last year when finishing second in the Guineas and then ran in the Derby and then went amiss at a short price and he's not been seen since. He could still be a really useful prospect. And I quite like the angle that it's a completely different set of form lines. We've touched on this before on the Matchbook podcast that sometimes you get tangled up talking about all the same horses that have been running against each other. And to find something separate from off-field a bit at 10-1, I think you could take a chance with him. And I did speak to somebody in a trading room and they have seen money for it. I think it's been sort of 14 and it's now about 10. So I think he's worth... I wouldn't back him each way because he's probably a sort of expletive or bust horse in that he's not run for a year.
Yeah.
He might be on, you know, you're not going to be... You don't want to be on at 2-1 a place, basically. But I'd quite happily back him at 10-1 to win. And the other one is Daban, who is a three-year-old filly of Gosden's, who I thought ran quite well when backed to win the Jersey at Royal Ascot. And her previous form is with Winter in the 1,000 Guineas. So again, 8-1, she's a filly. It's a completely different set of form lines, and I think she's probably slightly overpriced. And
I didn't mention that one, but that was one that I sort of was not too keen to cross out. So I couldn't put you off that, definitely.
But it's sort of race. I mean, I wouldn't mind as a punter having a package at the moment of Kapersky for Neil at sort of 6-1, Daban at 8-1, and Massat at 10-1. I think that's a good way of attacking the race rather than betting 7 or 8-1 on that Breton Rock doesn't win, basically. I mean, having said that, the flip side with exchanges is you could lay an 800-1 now maybe with Breton Rock, and I suspect you'll be able to have a 1,400-1 back on the day. So if people want to do that, that's another way of approaching it.
Yeah, some interesting selections for the feature race on Saturday, the Hungerford Stakes, live on ITV4 and Racing UK. For what it's worth, I will be weighing in with Stephen and Neil on Daban. That winter form is absolutely sensational. It's worth mentioning on Saturday at the Curragh, be live on At the Races, Rekindling and Order of St. George will battle for House O'Brien, Joseph O'Brien and Aidan O'Brien. Sorry, I've gone Game of Thrones mad. So they'll take each other on the Irish St. Ledger Trial, which is a significant race that, 3:30. And then on Sunday, 3:20 at the Curragh, we're going to see either Clemmy, September or Magical run for Aidan O'Brien, or possibly Happily. And these are really highly regarded fillies who will have a big say in the classics next season. So make sure you're watching that race. 3:20 at the Debutant Stakes. It's a Group 2 at the Curragh on Sunday. Some fascinating racing over the weekend.
Sounds good. Yeah, I'm just, correct me if I'm wrong, guys. I really like the way you talked about that Hungerford Stakes. If we get an 8.0, a 10.0, and a 9.0 and Dutch them, are we getting effectively about 2-1 on our money? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's near as damn it. If they're all 8-1, it's that's exactly 2-1. So you might do slightly better than that. So maybe 9-4, 5-2 for looking around. I think that's a better policy than. I mean, Labrisa Breeze is a solid enough favourite, so we're only really narrowing it down to 4. But it's probably better to do that than just to lay Breton Rock.
Brought together by their shared views on maximising expected value, Matchbook have partnered with Reg, raising for effective giving, the charity of choice for many professional poker players. They use science and rational decision-making to maximise expected value when helping to reduce suffering in the world. The Reg charity account, which has been generously donated to us by Matchbook this year. Last year, we had £1,000. This year, Jesse May, our charity betting bank from Matchbook is...
Well, we started with £5,000, and that's either great news for Reg Charity or great news for the opposing punters.
All right, what's the
maybe
current
great news for the exchange liquidity?
What's the current standing as we go into episode 2?
So we had a clean sweep last week, the wrong way, including getting our 1-5 on shot turned over on the esports, which I think has put me off that for a week or two. Oh. But I will say that I'm very, very happy with the way we're going to be attacking the bankroll management. And this is our first chance this new season of horse racing. And I love the shape of these Hungerford Stakes. 4,813 pounds remaining right now.
Okay, so recap for us the charity bets on this week's show.
So what we're going to do with the football, the Huddersfield Newcastle over 2.25 goals, going to give that one a miss. And the Spurs Chelsea minus a quarter, around 1.83, we're going to go 60 pounds on that. And then the Toulouse plus 2.75 goals versus PSG, even money. We're going to bet 40 on that. With the racing, we've got Defoe in the 14.25 in the Jeffrey Fear Stakes. We're going to put 40 on that. We're going to post up and try and get 9-4. I think if we can't get better than 2-1, we'll give it a miss. And in the Hungerford Stakes, just going to need to work with the Kelly calculator here. I think we're going to go around about 70 pounds on each of those horses and try and Dutch that.
You know he's serious when he's working off the Kelly calculator already this season. Jesse May means business.
I mean, basically what I'm doing, and Neil, tell me if you think, and Steve, do you think this is correct? I'm kind of early in the season with the football trying to factor in about a 0.5% or 1% edge, and with the racing right now, based on what you guys were saying, around about a 10% edge in that race for that coupling. Does that sound reasonable to you guys?
Sounds good to me. I mean, yeah. Obviously, if we have three losing weeks, you'll just be tripling up.
Oh yes, well that's understood.
Right. Fair enough.
And on that bombshell, we are done. We're back next week, where we're going to be talking about the international meeting at York, the Ebor meeting at York. The Yorkshire people will be getting all upset. The Ebor meeting at York, which should be a fantastic week's racing. And, of course, previewing the Premier League as well. From Jesse May.
Good luck, guys. Have a great weekend.
From Stephen Harris.
Thanks a lot, guys.
From Neil Channing.
Thank you.
And from me, Emmett Kennedy, thank you so much for listening to the Matchbook Betting Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did, a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts would be greatly appreciated. It helps to spread the word about the podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll chat to you again next week on Matchbook.com and on Apple Podcasts. See you then. God bless.